All right, here we go. November 3rd, episode 124 of the Hezzy, brought to you by basketballgods.net. The NBA has released the new 75-year anniversary jersey collection. I don't know what their city. It's all a money grab here, and teams have more and more colorways. The two that I like the best, it's by far and away the Charlotte Hornets. You see that gradient honeycomb. It's obviously very subjective, right? Everybody likes what they like. But I thought the Hornets and the Toronto Raptors with that black and gold, to me, those are the two cleanest. The two ugliest, I think Cleveland got done dirty, and Philadelphia. I don't know what Philadelphia's color scheme is. Again, it's very subjective, but a lot of them are kind of, we already saw them, like the Suns. The Valley one is dope. We've already seen that one. Utah. Some of these have already been released. The Warriors one, there's a thunderbolt down the side, but it's a lot of the jerseys are kind of just blah, right? Detroit, they're just basic. Maybe they've altered a little bit of the colorway. But yeah, Charlotte's and Toronto stuck out to me. But I'll be 40 here soon. I'm not a jersey copper. I have jerseys like for game day, maybe sitting on my couch, but I ain't going out in no jersey unless I got to maybe like go to the gym and it's laundry day or something like that, right? But let me know what y'all think. Maybe I'll put a poll in that. They got a new poll here on Spotify for the podcasts and see which jersey y'all prefer. Speaking of the Philadelphia 76ers, the other night Portland was in town. You heard the chants.
Chance going up here at the center as the six-time All-Star Damian Lillard drains the first.
Wouldn't it sound a lot better to say, we want Dame, we want Dame? Get it together, Philly. But Portland took another loss, and Dame continues to struggle shooting the ball. And I was looking at a stat here. Let me bring this up on my phone. You got Luka and Trey averaging 22. Beal's averaging 24. Dame's averaging like 18. You've got, a handful of the top scorers with their numbers significantly down. Everybody is pointing to the new rules, the physicality. And then this story kind of started to break out here over the last 48 hours. Listen to Paul George.
I saw CJ McCollum today said he wants feedback from players about the Wilson ball. Do you have theories about why it's not only affecting you guys, but more?
Yeah, I mean, I said that. Not to make an excuse or anything about the ball, but I said that it's a different basketball. It don't have the same touch and softness that the Spalding ball had, and you'll see this year it's going to be a lot of bad misses. You'll see a lot of bad misses. I think you've seen a lot of air balls so far this season. So. Not to put any, excuse or blame to basketball, but it is different. There's no secret. It's a different basketball.
I'm here to tell you that's a real thing. I've heard a lot of media, podcasters, people that cover the sport kind of scoff at the thought of the change of the basketball. Hoopers, you know. And the universal ball that everybody uses that hoops at LA Fitness or wherever you hoop at is that Wilson Evolution ball. I don't like it because there's always one super sweaty motherfucker on the court that whenever he touches the ball, the thing's soaked. And that Wilson Evolution ball, that leather, when it gets soaked, it's super slippery. The ball gets swung to you, you can forget about it. You can forget about seaming up on the ball when it gets wet like that. But I eventually had to concede and buy myself one of those evolution balls because that's what everybody played with. You get in a game and you're like, oh, this is the ball. I got to get used to it. I like the one that they use in college. I believe it's a Wilson as well, but it's the sway. It's like a softer sway leather because it doesn't get as wet. And the way I play, I've got bigger hands. I'm a palmer. I'm a palmer of the ball. So when a ball gets slippery, it squirts out of my hands. But I guarantee you this is a real thing. Now, I don't know if some of these guys got the new ball in the offseason and they've adjusted to it. Because I know some of you are going to be like, well, what about Tyler Hero? And what about this guy? And what about, I don't know, man. LeBron shooting the ball better. So sometimes it doesn't affect guys depending on how they shoot. But it really comes down to your fingertips and your feel. Seaming up on the ball and that spin, that feel off your fingertips. And when you change the texture of the ball and the hardness of it, then it changes that feel. And so I think that's what it is. I think it's the ball more than the fouls, if you want to ask me. So I didn't realize that they had changed from Spalding to Wilson. And I think that that's absolutely what it is. But I also got to thinking, like, conspiracy theory, that I like kind of what's headed here, because offense is down, defense is up, physicality is up, the speed of the game is up, there's less fouls, and it makes things more exciting. Now it's like when a guy is hot, it's more exciting. You know, we have to admit, the last 3-4 seasons, you'd turn it on and someone had 40-50 every night and hit 10 threes. So I think it's balancing the sport out a little bit better. Whether they meant to do that with the ball or not, I think they did with the physicality and speeding up the game, but it's going to take some time to adjust. Hoopers, you have a different ball. If you're a shooter, I shouldn't say hoopers. I should say shooters, because you can be a hooper, but if you're not really a shooter, it may not as affect you as much. Maybe it affects your handle, but shooters, man, that'll absolutely change the feel and really the release, the rotation of the ball. I brought the game up, but probably a lot of you weren't checking for it until afterwards. This young Orlando Magic team made a statement the other night on the road in Minnesota. Cole Anthony looking like a young Dame Lillard out there. I say young, but Cole, he's like 20 going on 38, right? Cole got old nigga spirit. Cole kind of a young old nigga, the way he carry himself. And look, it's early now, but do you realize what Greg's son averaging right now? 19-7-5, starting at the point guard position. I had mentioned the other day how small he is, but he makes up for it with athleticism and effort. And he was heat checking threes on this Minnesota team. Bamba looks serviceable. And then I know you saw the Franz Wagner blamer on the entire front line of this Minnesota team. The one thing that I hadn't realized, Jonathan Isaac, like he's been out for how long with the eight? He blew the knee out in the bubble. So I don't know what's going on with that, and they're just being extra precautious, but, you know, you add him to the mix of this front line, and again, you see the schematics. Look, Wagner, he could win Rookie of the Year with his efficiency and the juice he's playing with. The one area he's lacking is he's only averaging like 3 rebounds a game, but that's kind of by design when you look at how they have him out on the perimeter. But he dunks on their head and kind of, the reality of it is, look, I know Minnesota is trying to change their culture and kind of their identity. They got punked on their own court by the youngest team in the league. That's what happened. You saw Okiki putting the clamps on Cat late. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know. But this Orlando team, I'm impressed, and I'm intrigued to watch them, right? Because, again, obviously, Jalen Suggs, Wagner, you've got the two lottery picks, Cole Anthony coming to his own, Mo Bamba we're finally getting to see, right? All of a sudden, Orlando's like a fun team to watch here. The reality of it is, back to Minnesota, though, is Karl Anthony Towns is never going to be who we want him to be, right? We've seen enough. And that's, I'm not even slighting him. He's still an all-star caliber center. Any team in the league would still take him, but he's never going to be the guy. And he's never going to lead this team. And that's why I'm kind of waiting for Ant-Man to take over. And they're trying to just change the culture and be tough, but that wasn't a good look for them on their home court against that Orlando team. But let's get to, I think, the biggest drama of the week took place after that Bulls-Celtics game the other night, where Celtics up 19 and DeBalzac came back on the ass. Oh, shit, that was a super pause, huh? Yeah, man, so I'm gonna release a big game breakdown of this later today on my Patreon. I'm taking my time with it. I do think that Chicago's still overpassing. You're seeing Chicago still overpass. Vucevic is still the biggest culprit. It's interesting, though, man, because, you know, Vuce, he's nice, and he kind of makes everything work. All those, he hovers around the perimeter, and all those dribble handoffs and screens, and then the gravity he creates, because he can turn, pick and pop, he can roll, he has a little float game. So his value, I think it makes the offense click with the spacing. But I also don't think he's probably like the all-star caliber player that he was made out to be on that shitty Orlando team. I'll tell you one thing. If I'm San Antonio, I'm salty. DeRozan's shooting threes now like it's nothing. I mean, hey, it is what it is. I think it's almost the space and the shots that are being created with all that offense on the floor. He has no choice but to take them. Some of those corner looks, they're too good to pass up. And then it kind of snowballs to where you see him take a couple at the break. And I think I even saw him take one off the bounce, right? But without sounding too crazy, I mean, he looked like Mike in Boston the other night, right? With the fadeaway, everything was just coming easy to him. Cruising to the rim, pull up at his spot, right? Corner three. It was just a super efficient big night for DeRozan. And I know he's the headliner, but Alex Caruso changed that game. They were down 19 late in the third, and you saw them kind of change the energy, but they didn't really bite into the lead until the fourth quarter. But Caruso's ability to pick up the lead ball handler, but then he can switch any of the ball screens and hold his own against pretty much any of these big wing forwards. Like, now, obviously, you don't want to ask him to switch onto like an Embiid or somebody like that, but any of the, you know, Tatum, any of these guys, even Horford, he could hold his own. And so his ability, his switchability, his energy that he brings just to blow up plays. And then how about 46% from three? You say, well, how the hell is he shooting 40? Because he only shoots butt naked threes, as he should. So I thought Caruso really swung that game and gave them the energy. And then DeRozan brought him home with the still getting to the line. I think the scary thing about this Bulls team is you watch the game in its entirety and you're like, you still see them making mistakes because they're not really familiar with each other. You know, again, the overpassing and the ball movement, you like it to an extent, but you can tell they're still adjusting and getting used to each other. But the natural chemistry of this roster is not something you can coach up or anticipate. It's just happened. You've got a bunch of players that have come together at the right time in their career. And you just see the natural chemistry and personalities fit. And so, yeah, they're just going to get better and better. Well, obviously, they lose Patrick Williams. Let's see if they can add some front court depth. Who do they got? The big kid, Tony Bradley, is behind Vucevic, and he's trying to get healthy. I think he's going to be the X factor for them. I almost, you know, because at some point, look, they're going to have to face Giannis. They're going to have to face Embiid. Maybe not both of them, but at least one of them. And that's where I think Vucevic may struggle to stay on the floor. And so they're just going to need rim protection. They're going to need another big body. But yeah, the chemistry, again, you can't plan for that. It just is what it is. But the headliner, after the game, let me read you the quote. Mr. Marcus Smart. Every team knows we're trying to go to Jason and Jaylen. I think everybody's scouting report is to make those guys try to pass the ball. They don't want to pass the ball. And that's something they're going to learn. Fuck it. Trade Marcus, right? Well, the problem is they just gave him an $80 million extension and he's headed into his 30s. Marcus Smart's no longer like a value contract that they could easily move. And so I was looking for it when I went through. I have the edit already done. I just got to narrate it here after I record this. And I do see there's times where, you know, they could make the easy hit ahead pass. Or they don't really, when you look at Jaylen Brown and Tatum, when they come off screens, they only make one read, right? They only kind of look at the roller. They don't really look to the weak side. They don't really do any of that type of next level play creation. You know, Jaylen and Tatum subconsciously, are they competing against each other for that number one spot on the team, the top dog, and therefore it kind of makes them a little more selfish? I don't know, man. I don't really like the roster construct as far as they don't have any ball movers. But to me, the thing that stuck out to me most about this Boston team, the biggest problem is their transition defense. They're the third worst transition defense team in the league. And some of it is because they send their guys to the offensive glass. The other part of it is just a lack of urgency. And really what I see is whoever drives and penetrates to the paint, make or miss, they don't get back. They don't get back on defense. And you saw the Bulls not even push the ball fast, just kind of come up and, you know, at 45 miles per hour, if you will, and they're just like, oh, look what we have here. It's a scramble. You know, they're always scrambling, and so there's no sense of urgency. And to me, I've probably said this before, to me, like, Jason Tatum just doesn't have the kill gene. He's too cool for school. He doesn't have a sense of urgency out there, and inevitably, you can have all the Marcus Smarts you want. The team's going to take on Tatum's personality. Yeah, man, I think it's going to be interesting to see how aggressive is Stevens going to be, because it's no longer Danny Ainge in charge. Danny Ainge kind of dipped, right? He's seen this. He was like, oh, I made some missteps. You know what? Let me get up out of here. Everybody wants to crown the Miami Heat. Smacked Dallas around last night. Look, let's see what they look like in April. The history of the Heat are they peak too soon. And then you look at the age of this roster. I have a hard time imagining that they are healthy and intact when it matters because of the Heat culture, the mentality, the way they push these guys to perform every night. There's a cost to that. I've talked about it several times. Now, if they are healthy, yeah, you probably make them the favorite. You probably make them the favorite, at least in the Eastern Conference, with Tyler Hero taking the step. And then you consider how physical they're letting these games go. That definitely is advantage Heat when you look at their roster. Lowry, PJ, Butler, Bam, right? To they're not blowing the whistle. That's going to favor them most nights. But I just don't see them staying healthy. So I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach with them and see if they can learn from their mistakes in the past. Look, if they jump out to this amazing record, maybe some load management. I know that that's so un-Pat Riley in Miami Heat, but they need to consider it. And yeah, they beat Dallas. Look, Dallas plays too slow. Dallas, I think, plays at the slowest pace in the league, and the only player it benefits is Luka Doncic. They've over-catered to Luka, and his numbers are amazing, right? Well, not this year, 22 points a game. I don't know. And then you throw in Jason Kidd to the mix. I think Dallas and Boston are two teams here early that we've got to expect to be active in trade discussions. I saw a sit-down interview with Lemon Pepper Lou Will. Apparently, this is his last season in the league. He's still in Atlanta. And Taylor Rooks asked him, you know, about his career, his legacy. And he made a good argument as to why he is the best sixth man of all time. He said the numbers, but then he also said, look, I laid the blueprint. I made it cool to be the sixth man. I accepted a role in my prime and I did it. Good point. I do think that he kind of, I don't want to say modernized it, but he made it cooler to be, you know, sixth man like Lou Will. Drake probably helped with that too. But all of that said, the best sixth man of all time is Ginobili. Come on now. It's Manu Ginobili. And it's not about the numbers. It's about the moments. It's about the times that he stepped up on the stage that he did. The clutch factor. To me, it's not even close. It's Manu. But Lou's right there behind him. Jamal Crawford, right? I got love for Lou. Last night, Houston Lakers, they were playing a second game. They had a baseball series, right, where they played two games in a row, I believe. And it got a little spicy. It got a little chippy. Young Houston showed some heart. And Jalen Green finally had himself a game. What was his numbers here? 9 of 15, 5 of 10 from 3, 24 points, 5 assists, and 7 turnovers. If you didn't catch the game, you saw the late flurry of Jalen Green threes. And it's a great example of where he can shine with his shot creation. Right, with the step back and the spacing he gets, and then that elevation is just crazy, man. It's crazy. What I liked most about his performance, though, was the attitude, the chippiness. He played with a controlled anger. I like that a lot. My concerns, I talked about his shot selection. Look, the elevation, it's going to be hard to be consistent. I just wonder if this is kind of going to be who he is. Now, obviously, he's going to get stronger. He's going to get better. Don't get it twisted. I'm not calling him a bust or anything like that. But I'm just saying, is he going to be a really streaky scorer or shooter, I should say, because of that elevation? And then you combine the fact that he's got that young boy bag where there's just extra on it. It's not one step back, it's two, right? Like, he play with you a little bit. Like, he'll drop you off, bring you back, and then drop you off again. And that isn't exactly the most efficient way to score the basketball. I will say this, though. For the elevation and all the extra things that he does to get his shot off, how soft does that thing splash in the net, right? There's just a softness to the way his shots tickle the net that make you feel like, oh, man, he ain't going to miss. So it was good for him to finally have, I think, Houston and their fans, they wanted to see him have some sort of night, and I think he needed it too. The Lakers narrowly escape. I also thought there was kind of an element of you see how old this Lakers team is, right? They weren't really quick enough to stay with him. Let's see if Jalen can string together a few hot games. He can't just have one every four games, right? We'll see if he can start to add some consistency and maybe just take some easier shots. Take some easier shots. Tonight, a lot of games on the docket here. I'm checking for that Boston team going down and visiting young Orlando. for various reasons. One, Orlando, again, they're just fun to watch now. And then after the Marcus Smart comments, let's see what goes down here. Let's see if, what if Tatum hits him with the Kobe treatment? Remember when Kobe just wouldn't shoot? Was it that Phoenix series? Yeah, so I'm curious to see what happens there. You've got a revenge game, Kelly Oubre coming back to Golden State later that night, and then two potential playoff matchups in the East with Chicago, Philly, and Brooklyn, Atlanta. So a loaded night of games. This is the Hezzy, brought to you by basketballgods.net. I'm out, y'all.